Michel Foucault's The History of Madness reveals the genuine madness of the psychopaths who have employed the disciplines of psychology and priestcraft to control and eliminate populations. The white man of Hollywood was thus presented as the archetype of the psychopath. Movies like Halloween by John Carpenter and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre were brought out around this time during the Saturn was retrograde as a new phase in the political alchemy of the black magicians. Mental illness and violence were the take-home message that the moviegoers consumed along with their poisonous substances of soda pop and hot dogs. The total package of Hollywood Babylon was ready for purchase by the middle American consumer cattle, and the Jewish manufacturers of chaos were there in a pinch to supply their virtual drugs and synthetic poisons. The intelligent white man was certainly not spared the abusive harassment of the Jewish slanderers of the silver screen. The intelligent white man especially was slated for decapitation as means of associating the higher type of Aryan wise man, the intellectual leadership of the Aryan race, with a deviant and dangerous character. Hannibal Lecter, a presumed German or Anglo-Saxon intellectual archetype, is offered up to the gallery for defilement in Silence of the Lambs, and the clever Jewish career woman psychologist is preyed to his violent mind manipulation, his mental rapine of her otherwise pure soul. Thus can be seen the vehicle through which such a false association was introduced was through a presentation of the morbid fascination of the infrahuman dark side of the psyche so prominent in Freudian psychobabble and the infernal nature of Jewish Hollywood mystique. The working up of the Eros Thanatos dyad was and is even more so to this day a work of witchcraft to set up the white man for the slaughter. Indeed, the very notion of white existence in an openly acknowledged form is only permitted to exist in the form of the demonic, the pathological, and in the realm of the sinister, associated with crime, violence, and perversity, all by design with kosher approval. American History X, a film lauded by some who claim a favorable opinion regarding white identity, is yet another slanderous vehicle of psychodrama served up by the tribe. The protagonist is a young white man affiliated with a neo-Nazi gang who becomes embroiled in a murder of his parents' killers and acts out his sadistic and hateful behavior against the Negro criminal who begs for mercy but is not spared a curb stomping resulting in his death. The protagonist is incarcerated and reforms to a degree magically and without apparently sufficient reason, owing to encountering a friendly Negro in a jail cell. The movie features a Jewish counselor who simply wants to reconcile the differences of the white man and his Jewish tribe, to erase the hate through his superlative humanitarian sentiment and intellectual sophistication. This movie has its parallel in that of Higher Learning, which again inverts the roles of white, black, and Jew, portraying a young white man as a first-year university student who, owing to his shyness, falls into a skinhead gang for camaraderie. The token wise black man on campus played by Ice Cube speeches his language, his knowledge, to the white youth but to no avail. The end result is the violent outburst of the pathological white youth who took a wrong turn, unable to cope with the stress of life. The white youth ends his life after his violent assault against the innocent party, again acting out in his irrational and violent way. Hollywood has penetrated the soul of all with its morbid fascination for the defective and its normative inversion of otherwise healthy values. The main target for its aggressive assault has been the white man, the greatest threat to Jewish supremacy, and the means of castrating and hobbling the white man is their attempt to portray him as impotent and weak both mentally, physically, and spiritually. The white man in Jewish Hollywood is either a retard, a pathetic pseudo-hero macho man serving the Jews, females, and non-whites, or a psychopathic and violent person who is irredeemable in his despotic aggression. Viewer beware, all movies and shows on whatever platform are nothing but an experience of black magic witchcraft, and to perform the simple gesture of pressing a button may open up a Pandora's box of soul contagion that may render one terminally ill. Think before you tune in, turn on, and get screened out. The soul is a terrible thing to waste. Stephen King, Archetype of Jewish Mind Pollution. The author Stephen King is and was throughout his literary career an operative of the cabal, put into that position and given maximal media acclaim so that he could spread the mental virus of his cabal's destructive creed. Specifically during the generation when he was at his peak, the baby boomers were raising their children and had formed marriages and had developed themselves in their careers, ceasing to be purely dissolute hippies and had become converted to yippies through the incentive of the glitter of gold. This was the peak of the me generation, and the cabal at this time was putting forth as much destructive media content as they could with the malicious, deliberately contrived plan to genocide the white race through the following means: reduce the birth rate, encourage a purely self-serving hedonistic ideology centered around the libidinal economy, maximizing pleasure, minimizing pain, ultimately as a consequence of one, and two, to destroy the nuclear family, the foundation of the continuance of the white race as a whole, their endgame. The cultural creations of such things as Cheers, All in the Family, The Simpsons, WKRP in Cincinnati, the list goes on, were designed as propaganda vehicles to encourage the baby boomers to adopt the behavior of the characters in those venues and to act out in real life in their own lives the melodrama put forth in the movies and on TV from TV series like Dallas, etc. The women were targeted with a feminist message: prove that you have nothing to prove, and generally act up and seek to dominate the men, cutting off their balls and obstructing their role as a leader and hero figure of the family unit, disempowering and emasculating them and driving them into the bar and a lifestyle of hedonistic indulgence. Of course, the male's programming was equally destructive on the basis of an Archie Bunker or a Homer Simpson, a fun-in-the-sun type of devil-may-care fellow whose carousing in all too many cases led to the destruction of the nuclear family through deadbeat dadism, divorce and children who ended up growing up without a father figure, mama's boys who were inept and incapable of playing a role in the competition for dominance in the rat race of the Jew world order. Stephen King comes on the scene just as this culture was beginning and injects his Freudian psychodrama in literary form into the consciousness of the goyim, which presumably was his intention and that of his cabalistic handlers, to instill in the mind a virus which would replicate virally and vector into the younger generations, who would have instilled in their mind a similar psychodrama of Freudian lunacy, wanting to be overly close to their mother, though perhaps not in any sexual way but in that of the dependency of a chick in relation to a mother hen, and a maniacal hostility to their father. The works of King centered around relationships in large part against the background of ghouls and ghosts, which imparted to the reader a thrill of psychodrama that perhaps helped to enforce through excitation the self-destructive memes or tropes King was imparting in his works. An example of this Freudianism is very evident in King's earliest works, specifically Rage, which portrayed a youth who was disillusioned with the world of the late 60s and early 70s and who became sufficiently disgruntled to act out his dissatisfaction through shooting up his school. Of course, this was also predictive programming for alleged mass shooters and was deliberately created for this purpose as well, to create in the popular mind the notion that such things would and could happen and that the cause of these events was some mystical, magical, psychological defects, which of course were, according to the stereotype, typically common in white males, the usual suspect and target of the Jewish cabal. King also portrayed instances of female blow-ups, usually in connection with relationships such as in the book Rose Madder, and females being an empowered villain only because of their Christian nature, such as in Dolores Claiborne and the female character in Misery, further stigmatizing and psychopathologizing Christianity in King's typically Jewish Luciferian manner. The abnormal psychological development of Charlie Decker in Rage is attributed to a quasi-sexual Oedipal complex which he had developed in his relationship with his mother in youth and which recapitulated itself in his attempts at normal sexual activity in his teen years as a grass-smoking hippie, though even there he is portrayed as a marginal peripheral figure who exists as a loner, which is of course causally explained in an implicit way as a result of his Oedipal complex. Thus an association is created in the mind of the reader between mystical psychological processes and violence, thereby universalizing violence and even particularizing it, tying it to the white male and at the very least scapegoating white males, such that all of the non-white violence caused by any and every being but white males would be directed towards the white. Perhaps this was one of the motivations of the cabal, as it is in so many pop cultural venues from around this time, such as RoboCop, wherein, in the blackest and worst crime-ridden city in America, the real criminals aren't black but white, and a Jewish RoboCop works with blacks to fight against them, inverting the reality in the public mind. The Jewish actor Charles Bronson also, in the series Death Wish, strikes out in stereotypical Jewish vengefulness against white gangland. Thus the meme of white male criminality and white male psychopathology is planted into the popular consciousness. King would later go on to retract his book, but this during the Columbine shootings, which was yet another false flag event, thereby garnering more attention to the SOP through King's celebrity. The event was perpetrated by the cabal, and both teenage shooters were Jewish and anti-white, not white or white supremacists, as they were stigmatized by the media. King was quoted at this time to deliberately draw an association between Columbine and the story Rage, such that the story and its memes received the cascade of confirmation in real life through the SOP of Columbine, a literary SOP claiming to cause a false flag SOP in physical reality when both were contrived and false from their inception. Thus we can see that King was an operator of the cabal, and that his works served the purpose of stigmatization of white males as unstable and dangerous, and thus an object of suspicion, that the good people of society, females, non-whites and Jews, had to be watchful of, as the white male complex and problematical psychology could result in any threatening and harmful behavior to the innocent aforementioned. In terms of self-destructiveness of the nuclear family, we have King repeating in his road work under the pseudonym Richard Bachman the tense relations that exist between the man, a hard-working, older middle-aged man of the semi-responsible conservative types whose family life was torn apart through his obsession with his son, who had been killed in an accident which was, so far as the writer can recall, attributable to himself and his moment of negligence. Accordingly, the father was racked with guilt for the period recorded in the novel leading to his divorce, and his wife couldn't endure his obsessive nature and his loss of position from his job, which reduced his socio-economic status in her eyes, imputing to the white woman a gold digger motivation and the man a defectiveness, an impotency in performance. King here presents the figure or archetype, if you will, of the feminist, cold-hearted ball-cutter woman who lives to attain and maintain a certain socio-economic status and would have a willingness to sacrifice her relationship rather than to endure a loss thereof, thereby creating the impression in the reader of a male victim who is alone in the world and who, because of the economic forces that inhibit his world's continuance, is unable to continue in this world which has all but fallen apart around him, and must attempt to strike out in revenge through force against the municipality which wishes to bulldoze his house and compensate him for its value, taking away the memories of his personal life and tradition in the name of progress. He rejects this through pretending to go along with it as a means of preparing for his strike to blow himself and the road work up, as the latter represents the economic forces of capitalism which have largely ruined his life. His house also being the concrete embodiment of his dead son's memories, which system threatens to destroy tradition through the progressivism of the modern world. A world which he, being a representation of white tradition, is being overcome through his own impotence. The take-home message here, of course, is that in a world gone mad, the lone man has no recourse but to go mad and take poetic justice into his own hands, thus inculcating in the mind of the white male reader a sense of heroism as he interiorizes the behavior of the character, and a sense of the danger of the white male into the mind of readers not white and male, thereby lending further credibility to whatever events were alleged to have occurred during this time or shortly after, such as at Jonestown. Incidentally, the Turner Diaries was also written at this time, which lends suspicion to the author William Pierce's affiliation with the cabal and whether he was not a party to these activities himself. Thus more negativity related to family life is introduced into the popular mind. The Shining, which was written around this time, and the movie which accompanied it, further undermined the mental soundness of the white male in the mind of the audience, portraying it as unstable and potentially of a violent cast, able to erupt in acts of aggression through e.g. violence against women and children, and disruption of and incapacity to maintain the stability of the nuclear family, owing of course to the dark and hidden corners of the mind of the white male, who is a perpetual problem that only all of the forces of society unified against him can solve. In the Bachman books, another short story, The Long Walk, is presented serving as yet another vehicle of psychopathologization of the white male, conveying the impression through a contest which is a rite of passage for young males of sadomasochism, a competition called The Long Walk, in which the male youth volunteer to walk for as long as they can with others amongst whom only the victor survives, those who fail to continue the walk being gunned down by a military detail who accompanies their rite of passage, the winner being the last man standing. The notion conveyed, of course, is that anyone who would volunteer for and support such a behavior is necessarily a sadomasochist and mentally ill, implicitly condemning heroic acts of self-sacrifice as a sign of mental illness and presenting such acts as being undergone by almost exclusively white males within the context of a white male-dominated quasi-futuristic militarized society. Thus we see the stereotypical Jewish slander of white males and their heroic and virtuous societies. However, females are also not exempt from judgment in King's works, though typically portrayed as the Cabal had intended, the feminist archetype they had desired to construct being a righteous self-server and victim of heterosexual white male abuse or the systemic oppression of a white male society which they justifiably rebelled against. In the case of Rose Madder, the oppressed and abused wife righteously murders her husband. In that of Needful Things, Leland Gaunt, a charming gentleman entices females with the object of their lust, e.g., Elvis glasses that grant sexual excitement through magic and the cure of a hard-working woman's suffering but for a price, which implies that though they are victims, they are nonetheless complicit in blameworthiness, as the price they must pay entails a harm to another, thus serving themselves before others. This trope conveys the notion of a tension of relations between women and the other and within themselves, an inner struggle between their self-seeking egotism and their failed altruism, thus implicitly aspersing females while playing up to their victim complex and amplifying their self-understanding as a victim and encouraging them to rebel against the other over and against their own better interest, convincing them that their interest lies with themselves and not with the collective as a whole. Further stigmatization of the traditionalist worldview and the white male patriarchy is put forth in such stories as Children of the Corn and The Dead Zone. The former portrays the stereotype of the backwoods simpleton, a right-wing Christian, in this case a group of youth, who are bound to a fanatical creed of the letter of the law, of Christianity in its most fundamentalist nature, or course perverted by the ignorance and illiteracy of white youth such that the value system of Christianity becomes associated with backwards primitivism and a violent psychopathology of murder and propitiation of idols. The Dead One similarly portrays a backwards populist politicians in the Midwest attempting to castigate liberal values, and of course portrays him in the most stereotyped manner as a violent-minded and bigoted simpleton, in contrast to the erudite enlightened yuppie whose wife leaves him for a richer lawyer because the yuppie had a brain tumor which enabled him to have all manner of psi powers. This again stigmatizes the woman as a gold digger, a self-interested egotist and disloyal traitor, and the man as a victim though feeble and weak, while the white male populist grassroots politician is strong and powerful but only in a brute physical form, and thus again is posited as dangerous and a threat to the enlightened and progressive society. Throughout King's works, the hackneyed Freudian tropes of Oedipal complexes, inattentions and latent psychological defects and quirks are presented as hallmarks of heterosexual white normality, and this is a literary weapon employed to create negative regard for the white family, and the white race as a whole. No white is spared King's psychopathologization, from children to men to women, all are given the axe, just as Jack in The Shining gave the axe to his own wife and child. Such is the fate the Jew has in store for the white race, and which Stephen King's morbid psychodrama thrillers well exemplify and set the stage for as a literary weapon of demoralization. Jew Trek, The Trek of the Jew through the Stars, Star Trek, A TV series created by that Eugene Roddenberry is familiar to most people, especially the original series, which will be herein analyzed to illuminate the techniques Jews employ in their vilification and manipulation of Aryan mankind, as well as a presentation of their Magian morality, the saccharine and emotionally based ideology of Judeo-Christianity and its secular humanist modern variants by whatever name. The series was brought out in the 60s and reflects the zeitgeist of the times, a secular humanist and quasi-Christian worldview presented within the context of outer space exploration, an expansion of the Galactic Federation, which is the Judeo-Masonic template or blueprint embodied in the current United Nations. The series is presented in the future and was almost certainly intended to be predictive programming for the Goyim viewers, a revelation of the gods of the Cabal for the expansion of their dominion mandate, their federation of the world and indeed of all worlds. The hegemony of the Magian so is presented in this futuristic propaganda vehicle and being presented during a time of relative comfort and stability within the Western world was interiorized into the mass mind, which has been conditioned to be receptive to the saccharine and maudlin sentimentalism which pervaded Star Trek, the original series. The hippies and comfortably established moral majority of Middle America popped their popcorn and stared vacantly into their screens, absorbing the Magian morality which reinforced their Christian and liberal programming, giving them a sense that the end of history had occurred after the destruction of the evil Nazis and that infinite progress on the basis of their paradigm of science and Judeo-Christian liberal mores could be perceived through the medium of their mind control machines. Star Trek thus was the perfect vehicle of the solidification of the gods of the Cabal in fictional form. The Magian morality of the series portrayed the Federation being comprised of representative samples of the races of humanity in a form that served the interests of Jewry, aspersing and denigrating some and elevating others as a mimetic way of exalting and defiling the races according to their relative value as perceived through the all-seeing eye of the Cabal and its Jewish leadership. The following sketch of the diverse races and species in Star Trek illustrates this perspective. Captain James T. Kirk, the main protagonist of the series, was portrayed by William Shatner, a Jew. His genetico-spiritual stock was intended to serve a dual purpose in his being selected for this role: 1, to appeal to the Middle American moral majority as their archetypal leader, the anti-hero hero of Magian morality, the defender of the weak and meek and opponent of they who violate the laws of the Galactic Federation, which laws are a representation of the laws of the United Nations of today and which in the series subtly connote the laws inherent in mankind, i.e., the laws of secular humanism and its doctrine of human rights. 2. The implicit cucking and aspersion of the same Middle American hero through being played by the crypto-Jew William Shatner, thereby establishing the Jewish hybrid in the position of leadership of the Starship Enterprise over the mixed multitude of the American multi-cult. Shatner represented the morally conscious Kshatriya, only inverted by that same morality, just as his very being as a hybrid Jew, part Jewish part Aryan, was itself an inversion of the Aryan archetype. His sole mission was not to boldly go where no man had gone before in the adventurous mode of the Aryan spirit, but rather to expand the Magian morality of the Federation, as this was seemingly the only form in which his idol questing manifested itself. The parallel with Americanism and its enterprise is worthy of note, Kirk's ship being named Enterprise, connoting the American heroic capitalism of the United States of America Corporation. The hypocrisy of the enterprising nature of Americanism is easily observed in the corporation's usage as a golem of the Judeo-Masonic Cabal and indeed a scapegoat for its crimes which are carried out in its name. However, in the original series this enterprising nature is presented as a benefic altruism, the bestowal of the gifts of Magian morality upon the other, and as such it is a futuristic portrayal of the export of Americanism so justly critiqued by Francis Parker Yockey in his work The Enemy of Europe, as the greater enemy than the hordes of Bolshevik Russia, as more subtle and having a more poisonous influence on the culture organism of Aryan mankind. The name James Kirk also has subtle connotations not readily perceivable by the average consumer of sensationalistic propaganda, James being a Gnostic term referring to the Gospel of James, which suggests Kirk is a representation of this figure and the anti-Christian message Star Trek serves as a vehicle of. Kirk's heroics consist of defending the weak, the so-called peaceful groups of aliens, and rescuing redeemable representatives thereof from the non-peaceful culture or species of the alien other. The hegemonic morality of the Jew and Christian is here portrayed one intolerant of the other and endowed with a salvation complex, a busybody motivation to preach the word and its enterprise, to impose upon the other its own cultural norms and to negate all otherness not assimilable into itself. Some examples will be discussed later on. Spock, a Vulcan, is Kirk's right-hand man. Spock represents the Jewish archetype of the superlatively intelligent and logical Jew whose morality is based upon causality, cause and effect, and was largely of an unemotional nature, being half Vulcan and half human. His mother, as the episode of Tower of Babel reveals, being an Anglo-Saxon, connotative of the historical relationship between the British and Jews and the interbreeding that has been ongoing since the beginning of the British Empire and its American successor. Spock is thus redeemable according to the imagined morality of Judeo-Christianity, being not a purely robotic type and may to some extent be seen as a messianic Jew or Jew who can resonate with the light of Christ and thus find salvation on board the Enterprise with the subtly connoted Christian leader Kirk. Spock utilizes his logical faculties for good, to facilitate the managing enterprise of the Federation rather than serving his own particularistic tribe from whom he has been alienated through the shattering of his genetico-spiritual type, being a hybrid and thus not bound to the racial soul of the Vulcan species. The planet Vulcan, according to Alice Bailey and other theosophists, is an actual planet concealed from the view of Earth given the relative orbital paths of the planets behind the planet Mars. Perhaps the figure of Spock is a subtle reference to Vulcans and the possible presence of the ancestors of Jewry thereon. This the writer is not qualified to say. The logical, rational nature of Spock is a consistent theme throughout the series and becomes a moral issue as viewed through the lens of the series' Magian perspective, the alleged conflict between the rational and higher intuition of the enlightened or complete soul, the perfect Ashlars of Kirk and other of the humans of the multicult Federation. Thus the inferiority of the purely rational stance or modality of consciousness embodied in Jewry is affirmed, and the superiority of the objective and yet contradictorily emotional and soulful intuition of such as Kirk is posited it over and above this purely logical mental state. The failure of a completely transcendent perfection of the consciousness in the case of the captain of the Enterprise, however, is reflected in criticisms made by Spock regarding humans and their emotional nature, subtly aspersing the human all too human Goyim, though not omitting criticism of Spock as well. Subordinate to these two caricatures are Bones, a doctor representative of the German-Irish-American pragmatist and Scotty, and irascible Scotsman. Bones' character is that of a gruff, no-nonsense fact man typical of the American materialist specializing in science and good for little else, a backhanded insult against the American type. The humane all-too-human nature of Bones is observable in his consistent emotional outbursts, again underscoring the American type. Scotty is a characteristically British follower, good at serving the Federation with his gritty boorishness and stiff upper lip pedantry. The British officer type is subtly mocked, and he is portrayed as of only a limited intelligence, capable of thinking only within the schema of rules, by the book according to the Federation's decrees. Yet more subtle mockery of the Goyim can be observed in the thinker of Uhuru, a name denoting freedom in Swahili. That she is some form of technical communications officer suggests the parlay nature of the Negro with her propensity for the imitation of her betters, being a mere imitator of the messages of the officer caste of the Starship Enterprise. She is dressed in red, connoting the passions and the lower mool and Hara chakra, implying a lack of spiritual development. This contrasts with the gold uniform of Kirk, philosophical gold, the citronitas phase of hermetic alchemy, and the blue of Spock, a blue color correspondent with Uranus, the ruler of the new golden age of Aquarius, along with Saturn, and connoting a higher spirituality. Sulu, a Japanese man, plays a comparatively innocuous role in the background, a technical wizard who, though a Japanese samurai figure, is played by an openly homosexual male aspersing the Japanese who opposed Jewry during the Second World War. This is yet another example of the cursing of the Gentiles by Jewry emasculating the Japanese archetype and inverting it from the masculine to its antithesis, the effeminization of the masculine. As regards the diverse species in the original series, the Vulcans have already been discussed. One particular species, a pig-like hairy race of relatively short and stubby aliens dressed in a garment similar to a suit of armor and being pinkish-red in complexion with a coarse and aggressive temperament, undoubtedly connotes the German people. This stereotyped figure reveals the hostility of Jewry toward the German people, the porcine appearance connoting the consumption of pig meat amongst the German population, which is a commonly consumed food. This pig-like alien figure is represented in the original series as of an immoral nature, involved in all sorts of illegal enterprises throughout the galaxy and being viewed in a negative light by the Federation. The Andorians are a group of aggressive and warlike blue-skinned aliens who undoubtedly connote the Devas or Vanir of the Hyperborean mythos, the beings who arrived on Earth and mixed with the anthropoids either through viviparous and or genetic engineering, creating the hybrids called humanity today and who the blonde-haired and blue-eyed people are closest to in their constitution. These beings are portrayed as of a cold and ruthless nature and are outliers like the pig-like aliens, not fully on board the Federation and its hegemony. Yet another alien species is portrayed in the episode of Whom Gods Destroy. The Arians, green-skinned Jewish-appearing females, are portrayed as having a limited intelligence and yet being of a sexually promiscuous nature. The female is depicted as having a great capacity, similar to the Jew, of plagiarism and mimicry, as well as a seductive and mesmeric quality. The female dances and attempts to beguile Inkirk, who is not fully susceptible of her charms owing to his superlatively developed mind, whose higher intuition guides him away from the appeals to his baser drives her seductive dance intends to overcome. Perhaps, though the franchise was created by Roddenberry, a Jew, and implicit castigation of the lower type of Jew is presented. In the episode, the menagerie, a fantasy scene is enacted by higher, more developed aliens, which depicts a similar Orion slave girl dancing to a Near Eastern style music of a rhythmic and sensual nature connotative of the Near Eastern type. The green skin of the female may have connotations to the reptilians who allegedly derived from Orion, specifically Alpha Draconis, and have engineered in their image Jewry through genetic engineering between themselves and Neanderthals and other anthropoidal entities on Earth as it is in heaven. No other appearance of green Orion denizens occurs in the original series to the writer's knowledge, save in one episode discussed later. That only female green Orion slave girls appear as representatives of Orion aliens may be attributable to the way in which Jewry conquers others through insinuation and assimilation by way of the female, expanding their power through forming a symbiotic relationship with the host, employing their females as a hook to hook in the Gentiles into themselves as part of their hive mind, forming genetico-spiritual symbionts like Captain Kirk. In the first season of Star Trek, there was another captain named Pike who is subjected to the mind control of the higher aliens who may connote some form of Neptunian species. This inference may be drawn not only on the basis of the properties conventionally associated with Neptune in astrology, but on that of correspondence with the depiction of Neptunians in the 50s show Space Patrol and the episode Slaves of Neptune. The Neptunians are a species with superlatively developed brains, making their skulls very large relative to their physical body and having a superior psychic and spiritual power over that of the so-called humans, operating on the basis of deception and pushing the limits of cosmic law to serve themselves. Thus they are portrayed as black magician figures. In both episodes, The Menagerie and Slaves of Neptune, the Neptunians are depicted as slavers who employ their mental power to enslave humans, rendering them drone chattel slave labor, carrying out their tasks and living within a false reality, a matrix world of illusion that shifts their consciousness away from their slavery. In the first Star Trek episode, the Anglo-Saxon blue-eyed Captain Pike is shown falling victim to the Orion slave girl in the Matrix simulation of the Neptunians. He is thus depicted as fallible and susceptible of the intoxicating charms of Samasra, whereas, in the Star Trek episode Whom Gods Destroy, Kirk is shown to maintain his equanimity in relation to the green-skinned Orion slave girl, thereby demonstrating his superiority to the hybrid type, to the pure Anglo-Saxon. Kirk being a Jewified Anglo-Saxon, though this is not explicitly revealed, of course. Yet another alien species revealed in Star Trek is that of the Gorn, a reptilian alien species with a violent aggression which characterizes his behavior, one of the hostile reptilian. Thus the distinction is put forth between the redeemable character of the Orion slave girl and the Gorn, one of the pure types of reptilians. That the Jews are presumably bound up with these creatures via genetic engineering can be inferred on the basis of their religion of fear and trembling, and this before their plurality of deities, the Elohim, and this deity's subordinate hierarchies of angels and seraphim, who may indeed be hybrids or related alien species or those engineered by themselves, such as the Grey Aliens. Aleister Crowley, a high-level Freemason and OTO member, spoke of having contact with Lamb and illustrated this creature which most closely approximated the Grey Alien. Given that to all appearances, Masons served Jury and their Dark Overlords, it may be evidence of there being a connection between the Greys and Reptilians, with the former being some type of cybernetic robot similar in fact to what Jury is and which Miguel Serrano characterized as robots of the Demiurge, the Demiurge presumably meaning the one being who his servants worship. As a side note, one might conjecture that the Grey Aliens are genetically engineered with anthropoids on the Earth, and that the product of this genetic engineering may be the Chinese or related Oriental races who are looked upon as members of the Federation. Lamb looks similar, however, to the Neptunians of the series Space Patrol and the species depicted in The Menagerie, and thus it could be the case that the Neptunians are this particular form of alien species able to impose upon others illusions, mind-bending magnetic influence, and to place them within a matrix controllable by themselves. The episode Whom Gods Destroy features more of the moralizing psychodrama of the Magian-occupied regime and government. The superior nature of modern technology is presented as a benevolent and progressive boon to heal the world, and indeed to heal the galaxy through the intermediation of the Galactic Federation. The technology presented in this episode is that of so-called medicine, which is used to heal prisoners on a prison planet administered by a wise Chinese doctor affiliated with the Federation. The prisoners are the typical examples of the enemy of the Federation, the blue aliens from Andoran, the pig-like aliens and their leader, a madman former captain of a starship of the Galactic Federation, an Englishman and his female and green-skinned Orion companion whose imitative capacity expresses itself in writing Shakespearean poetry in a plagiaristic fashion. The theme of the episode may be encapsulated into points: 1. An implied castigation of the British Empire and the British people and their arm's-length affiliates, and 2. The necessity of taking the appropriate measures to heal the madness from the mind of British and related species. The science in the form of medicine and the allegedly benevolent Federation of Jews and hybrid Jews and their simple goyim work with the wise Chinese man to heal the mental illness of the rogue British colonialist former Federation captain using the futuristic traditional Chinese medicine of the wise Oriental. The captain is alleged to have sought the genocide of a peaceful species of aliens on another planet in order to take over their territory, though having failed and having as a consequence been incarcerated on the prison planet with his fellow madmen. The former captain seeks to trap Kirk and Spock on the planet and employ his powers to transform himself into them, shape-shifting into their image from knowledge he derived from Orion. Perhaps this is a connotation of the shape-shifting reptilians who derive from hence and who likely have been intertwined with the British for millennia in especial prominence amongst the Rothschilds and the higher-level Jews, though probably related to them as a collective group. Crowley's Lamb and I was possibly play a role here. The Magian morality of Star Trek is imposed upon the consciousness of the viewer with the depiction of the megalomaniacal, mentally ill captain, the representative figure of British imperialism, his personality being devious and underhanded and requiring in the end the use of a stun phaser to incapacitate him from his murderous designs, all in the name of peace. That the actions undergone in the name of the British Empire were blamed upon the white population as a scapegoat by Jury for their own crimes, having controlled the empire from its origins, is a typical example of their scapegoating tactics. The examples of Winston Churchill orchestrating the genocide of 4 million Indians in India and earlier attempting the genocide of the Boers in South Africa and initiating the Second World War, the orchestration of the Irish potato famine, the mass murder of Iranian people in the Findus Eichler period, all blamed upon the white indigenous stock of Anglo-Saxons. The Federation is portrayed as wanting peace and, motivated by this hypocritical pose of moral superiority, imposed themselves upon others. The captain who went rogue is prevented from harming others through the intervention of the science of the Galactic Federation, administered by the venerable Chinese doctor and his friends, the hybrid Anglo-Saxon Dukirk and the Jewish Spock and their witless goyim of the Federation. Pretending to fight hate, violence, tyranny, etc., and defend democracy, peace, love, God, humanity, etc., is a hypocritical modus operandi which the Federation of the United Nations and which the fictional predictive programming vehicle of Star Trek presents as its revelation of the method and karmic cop-out. In the episode of The Gamesters of Triskelion, a planet has been captured by beings so advanced they have eliminated their bodies and become nothing but brains placed into an impenetrable bubble. They hold arbitrary sway over the prison planet, which is run as a game, with various alien life forms being captured and forced to fight one another in a gladiatorial combat within the figure of a swastika variant, a Triskelion, a druidic symbol connotative of eternity and of the pole star. Within this matrix of the world, similar to the octagon of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the diverse hybrid species are pitted against one another and must fight to the death to entertain their druidic overlords. Perhaps this is a connotation of the creators of Star Trek's theosophical Gnostic perspective of the Aryan race and its leadership enslaving all within its matrix of manipulation, and the Federation being a liberating influence which frees the diverse mixed multitude from its clutches. The combatants to feature in the Triskelion matrix arena are representatives of certain earthly humanoids, though given an alien modification to a degree. The Ringmaster, himself a controlled puppet controlled like the others via a headset as of this druidic cast, a pale and pasty crypto-duke-elt with black robe who performs the role of earthly emissary or administrator of the archontic brains who govern the planet from within its crust. Possibly herein can be seen connotations to the Hollow Earth and the Vrilli, only in a subtly mocking and distorted form. Similar to John Carpenter's movie Season of the Witch, the druid figure serves as controller, abuser and intermediary between the higher archontic forces and the mundane or profane combatants or average everyday population of the world. The magic of the druid and his higher forces is materialized into mere brains and material devices affixed to the population as slave collars and crude gladiatorial implements, thereby denigrating the spiritual power of the original druid priesthood, which had fallen through intermixture with jury. The combatants who obey the rules are given different colors as representative of their performance level and adherence to duty, being rewarded for pedantic and unthinking order following. A parallel with the world system and its rank ordnung can be seen more especially with military and police forces, whose badges reflect their devotion to duty, duty to the world order and its archons. The combatants are the aforesaid stock types, a hairy Neanderthal-looking male creature perhaps representative of one of the age-old enemies of the Jew, the Arab, a primitively dressed Nordico-Germanic type, a blue Andoran, and a female whose features are Jewish of the Ashkenazi type. Additionally, there is a green Orion female who has a butch and masculinized form and behavior. Perhaps this last connotes the ancestor of the Nordics or Germanics and attempts to draw a parallel between the Nordico-Germanic people and Orion. Given the previous appearances of the Orion slave girls being of a Jewish type, this appears somewhat contradictory and conflictual, and what implied message Roddenberry is attempting to convey is uncertain. What can be more easily understood is the significance of the Jewish female combatant. She is the archetype of the devotee of the letter of the law of Jewish legalism and unquestioningly adheres to the commands of the archons and their physical emissary, the druid. She is a warlike figure who fights in devotion to the law and requires the intervention of Kirk to rekindle in her breast the fire of the sacred feminine. Kirk's Christian influence exerts a warming effect on her overly saturnine disposition, and as the episode moves forward, his kindly altruism toward her assists in freeing her from the Triskelion prison. The other figures are simply dispatched without regard for their lives. The hairy ape man and the blue being are killed without sympathy, and the Nordico-Germanic man simply disappears as he loses the game going, whither is not divulged. Perhaps this battle scene is a revelation of the method of what Jury has in store. Again, the theme of the historical continental non-Christian Aryan stock and their ancestors the Vanir as well as the Arabs are depicted as largely irredeemable and other to the Magian ethos and ethnic group of the Federation, which is comprised nearly exclusively of Jews, the British and American hybrid stocks with token non-Aryan elements. Thus can be seen, as evaluated from the Jewish perspective, the divergent and irreconcilable groups of humans, those they wish to retain and those they wish to eliminate. Throughout the Star Trek episodes, a figure of a young blonde woman is presented, the archetype of the Nordic Aryan, blue-eyed and blonde-haired. She is presented in a menial role as Kirk's secretary or de facto servant and is portrayed throughout as having a quasi-romantic relationship to Captain Kirk, the hybrid Jew. Perhaps this is a revelation of the method of the assimilation tactic of Jury, who wish to form a symbiotic hybrid between themselves and the best of the Aryans, creating figures like Captain Kirk as their anti-hero hero type. Assimilating into themselves the blood of Aryan mankind as both an empowering act as well as one of neutralization of their enemies. Apparently, the Nordic girl was fired after 8 episodes. In all probability, she was sacrificed by the ghoulish Jews in their vile Kabbalistic rites. The episode The Return of the Archons entails a subtle mockery of Christianity and a positing of the Gnostic solution to the problem. Kirk and Spock arrive on a planet which is reminiscent of the antebellum south of the United States of America, a cowboy town in which the citizens are coerced to worship a god whose name they must utter and it be perpetually on their lips. They must always smile and never express any negative sentiments, else incur the wrath of this being, which is a holographic projection controlled by the priestly caste rulership. Most of the priests also are under the spell of this being and abduct Kirk, Spock and another subversive who have been recognized as heretics and are thus imprisoned in a dungeon. This event connotes the Inquisition, which had rounded up they who were deemed heretics and subjected them to persecution and torture, as is revealed in the books Exposing Christianity by Joy of Satan Ministries and The Criminal History of Christianity by Karl-Heinz Drexler. Of course, these works, as well as the episode itself, may very well be not only an exaggerated but distorted view of history. In the end of the episode, the holograph generating machine is destroyed. The machine had generated the matrix of the god delusion, keeping the citizens of the town trapped within the rigid paradigm of Magian morality, of an unthinking obedience toward what represented itself as authority and what entails an absurd devotion to the prescribed rites of the code of the god. These rites revealed their absurdity in the outburst of mayhem of a festival in which anarchy reigns during a certain prescribed hour and, once completed, the townsfolk are obliged to return to their rigid lives of devotion to the dogma of their god and his priest caste. Perhaps this holograph generating machine is a fictional portrayal of the actual holograph generating machine that exists on planet Saturn and which is operated by this group of reptilian aliens to trap people within the matrix of illusion, working in conjunction with the Judeo-Christian priest caste on this earth, as David Icke has spoken of in his presentation The Moon Saturn Matrix. There must be some truth in this episode's message of the overly correct, rigidified laws of religious zealots. Regardless, the Federation is no proper solution, should entail not only the supremacy of Jury over all but the virtual erasure of the Nordico-Germanic stock, they who have derived from the Vanir and who are the only real salvation for this fallen world. The normative inversion tactics of Star Trek are designed to castigate and defile the Aryan race and to cast in a venerable light Jury and their Shabbos Goyim. The hierarchy of values of Star Trek posits first and foremost before all an implied supremacy of Jury in the figures of Spock and Kirk, and subordinate to them the British and American type, followed by the visible minorities. Of course, given the trickery of Jury, this template for the Federation of the World was formulated for mass consumption during a time when the white demographic of the Anglosphere, of the British Empire and America was still the majority. The assimilation tactics of Jury have thus far created for themselves a majority power share and have made of them a secret majority minority in all white created nations, unbeknownst to most of the gullible white population, who have been able to perceive only the overt otherness of the black, brown, yellow and red, not the Captain Kirk crypto-Jews amongst them. Accordingly, they have become replaced, assimilated into Jury, who still use them as a scapegoat for juries' plans for global dominion, blaming the white man for their own sins while the white man labors guiltily under the yoke of wage slavery and the mental shackles of the Magian morality of the Federation of the World. Race wars a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. The franchise Star Wars began in the 1970s during the discovery of the moons of Saturn. The Jewish director and writer George Lucas became the bearer of this torch of the false light in his original trilogy, served up as a propaganda vehicle for the transvaluation of all values of the Aryan race and indeed of the distortion of the actual history of our origins on this Earth. The meaning of the franchise is embodied in its name, that being the cosmic war which actually occurred a long time ago and in a galaxy far, far away between the Nordic Devas and the reptilians and their slaves. The actual history is inverted in the franchise with the actual good being portrayed in stereotypically Judeo-Christian terms as evil or that which is a violation of the Force, and the actually bad exalted in the stereotypical Judaic sense of good, that which is humble and righteous, a persecuted victim, fighting for the Lord, i.e. for God against they who are its violators, the alleged disturbers of the Force. The following analysis of the original trilogy of Lucas will be a comparative one revealing the probable actual historical occurrences, the true events and the Jewish distortion as well as the distortion of values. The first part will focus on the racial cast of caricatures that reveal actual history and its Jewish distortion, while the second will focus upon a more linear analysis of the trilogy's storyline. The propaganda vehicle of Star Wars is intended to be an entertaining mode of transmission of Magian morality into the consciousness of the broad masses or Goyim, to transmute their relatively healthy mind into a mind of corruption and on that basis to destabilize the Aryan society. The two sides or factions portrayed as pitted against one another in the franchise are, the Empire and the Rebels. The Empire, one might conjecture, is a caricature of the Catholic Church, National Socialism and Ancient Rome synthesized together into an archetype of Aryan mankind. All of the actors who played the Empire were white, particularly of the ancestry of the nation's Jewry stigmatizes continually in their media, English, German, Italian and Austrian the representatives of the British Empire, the Catholic Church, the Austro-Hungarian and Holy Roman Empires and National Socialism as well as the Italians of Rome in both its pre-Christian and Catholic form. The archetype of the stereotypical evil Aryan stands forth clearly in the Empire. Its ethics are portrayed through the lens of the Jew Lucas as that of the violent, ignorant, exploitative, usurious and totalitarian personality type as Hannah Arendt in her book of the same name called. The stigma thus is established from the beginning scene of the trilogy of the aggressive and violent Aryan Empire spoken of in the trilogy simply as the Empire and sets its precedent for the remainder of the trilogy as the dark specter of evil pursuing and hunting the innocent rebels who in the words of the Jewish princess Leia just want peace, echoing the refrain of the Jewish pathos of today's world. This stereotypical depiction of the Empire imposing its totalitarian universalism upon all is a direct attack against the Catholic Church and all related putatively Aryan groups and movements who Jewry has historically viewed as an opponent to their self-serving belief in their entitlement to rule the world. The rebels, by contrast, are presented as humble victims and freedom fighters, embodying the archetype of Magian morality as Spengler characterized it, that of the Middle Easterner with his lunar mutability and his telluric orientation toward the emotional level of consciousness. These are depicted as typically Jewish and inclusive of the mixed multitude of humanity as well as the earthly humanoids Jewry exalts in their media as anti-heroic heroes of the underprivileged. Their ethics are that of the persecuted victim, the chandal morality spoken of by Nietzsche in Beyond Good and Evil and the genealogy of morals. All they want is peace and to be left alone to live in their limited state of what they call harmony or a static inertia within the Force.